Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
The last issue I'd like to address is healthcare. This is obviously a complicated issue, but I am very optimistic about the progress that they're making. We will also ensure that the reform we pass brings down the crushing cost of healthcare. We simply can't have a system where we throw good money after bad habits. We need to control the skyrocketing costs that are driving families, businesses, and our government into greater and greater debt.
Well, even with big stories on the international front like elections in Iran, that was one of the big subjects of President Obama's press conference yesterday, healthcare and the healthcare crisis. Is there really a crisis? And if there is, what's the nature of that crisis and what is the solution? Some pay single payer. We'll do it like so many other countries, industrialized countries have done. Centralized single payer healthcare. And even if we don't come up with that solution, then what is the solution? What's the problem that we're trying to solve here? I find extremely confusing and, quite frankly, expensive. We're going to talk about healthcare here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. James Lansbury joins us. After that half hour's conversation, Pastor John Moe will join us to talk about the Great Commission. We're coming to you live this Wednesday. It's June the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can email us right here in the studio as well. We'll get your questions and comments in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, the Issues Etc. comment line, we'll hear from some of our listeners. And then Colleen Carroll Campbell will join us. We'll talk about reality TV, which is everywhere now. And John and Kate Plus 8 with Colleen Carroll Campbell in the second hour of the program today. 1-877-623-6943 or talkback at issuesetc.org. James Lansbury is president of Alliance Healthcare Sharing Ministries and vice president of Samaritan Ministries International based in Peoria, Illinois. James, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Is there a healthcare crisis?
Well, I think there certainly is, but crisis defined literally as a point of decision where we need to actually make that decision in order to decide which side of a line we're going to come down on. You know, a crisis is that point where a human being comes to, and if they make the right decision, things get better. They make the wrong decision, things get worse. And I think that we are at that point with our healthcare industry in the United States.
What's the problem?
Well, the problem is that we've had a number of economic influences that have been driving healthcare costs up for the broad variety of American people. You know, the vast majority of us are paying more and more for healthcare services than we were 30 or 40 years ago in particular. And the variety of things that are those economic influences are mostly related to A, poor government policies, or B, poor government actions. And I'll give you just a few brief examples there. The first is the Medicare-Medicaid Act that came out in 1965. Medicare and Medicaid currently provide as much as 10 to 12% in cost shifting of the private cost. And so if you pay for a doctor's appointment and that doctor's appointment is $100, probably $10 to $12 of that $100 is related to cost shifting from Medicare and Medicaid patients who are not reimbursing providers as much as private payers. And so that cost shifting gets worse and worse for Medicare and Medicaid over the years because they're not keeping up with the private sector as far as inflation and reimbursement rates. The second thing is a piece of bad tax policy that goes back to post-World War II when we're having wage and price freezes, and employers were trying to attract new employees, and so they came out with this new thing called hospitalization insurance, which before that was never, ever tied to employment. But they worked out a deal with the IRS to make that a tax-free benefit, And so employers who wanted to offer just a little bit extra to get that good employee in were able to offer this hospitalization benefit. It cost next to nothing at the time, paid for 80% of large hospital bills when you actually came into that, over and above a large deductible. And since then, it's this fledgling hospitalization insurance has turned into a multi-trillion dollar market where we have huge amounts of medical expenses getting borne because this bad piece of tax policy gives a perverse incentive to purchase as much health care as possible and only purchase it through your employer. And this, of course, drives the cost up dramatically because of that artificially increased demand because the consumer, the individual patient, is completely insulated from any of the costs. Another thing the government has done that has helped drive up the cost of health care is through state insurance mandates. In the 50 states, there are a total of 1,900 insurance mandates that affect the individual insurance premiums in their state from 20 to 50%, depending on the state, the high end being Massachusetts and New Jersey, where in Massachusetts, if you write an insurance policy, it has to cover hair replacement therapy and in vitro fertilization. So between all of that government action, we have all of these economic influences that are driving health care costs up. And in recent days, the public rhetoric has been to blame those cost shifting on the uninsured, which are not the problem. They shift less than 2% of their cost to the total cost of the insured patients. But so we have all these problems where government interference in the market is driving costs upward. And so what the government wants to do is come in and take over the rest of the market.
Okay, let's deal with two of the kind of extreme solutions that are sometimes proposed. The first one, not so much lately, and that is, hey, pay as you go. Let's go back to the way it was when the doctors made house calls. He'd send you a bill. You paid the entire bill. You didn't have insurance to cover that. You simply paid what he charged you, and what he charged you is what the market would bear, so he didn't overcharge you, and he was interested in keeping you as a patient, so he didn't order all sorts of needless tests because someone else would be paying for it. And if we let the market solve this and people just pay out of their pockets, then it'll all eventually even out. And then we won't be having a question about whether or not people have health insurance or not. What do you make of that solution?
Well, that solution is simplistic, but on the broad scale, if we could actually achieve that, it would certainly work in having some kind of catastrophic insurance. You know, no one carries car insurance to cover oil changes and gas in their car. And so we could remove health insurance back to that hospitalization insurance that was there before. And it would certainly help. And we do have some patient-centered models that actually get the patient back into play here where they have some skin in the game, so to speak, where they're actually paying cash or their own money, money they control, for those basic medical services. And a couple of those patient-centered options would be healthcare sharing ministries, like where I work, or an HSA combined with a high-deductible insurance plan, and those are rising in popularity. We're approaching 20% of Americans under 65 who have an HSA plan or some form of a patient-centered or consumer-directed healthcare benefit plan. And we're seeing some effect on costs because of that, because the patient, again, is back in that place where they can evaluate the cost and benefit, and the market starts to govern whether or not doctors can charge certain amounts. And instead of becoming a big game with the insurance company and the government of how high you have to raise your list price in order to get what you need to survive, it becomes just a point where the patient is actually making decisions. And we're seeing other innovations in the market, like these quick care clinics that are popping up in Walmart or Walgreens and strip malls all across the country, where you can go in without an appointment for a fraction of the cost of going to see your normal doctor, even possibly lower than your copay and your insurance, and be able to get in and out quickly with everything you need. And, of course, that's certainly a market innovation that's out there that is going to be a positive influence on the healthcare market as a whole, as long as it's allowed to survive.
On the other end of the spectrum, by way of offered solutions, is the one that is so often discussed here, but people with the kind of political antenna say it's not realistic at this time, and that's single payer. We just centralize it all, and we do what some European countries have done, and we simply pass the cost along to one central organization that through, I guess, our taxes would end up covering everybody minus the copay. That's what it sounds like to me. What do you make of that one?
Well, very few people are talking about a single payer with a copay. Usually when they're talking about a single payer, they're talking about everything being completely funded through a taxpayer system. And that's going to end up with one of two things. It's going to end up with healthcare costs that are out astronomical because there's absolutely no engagement in cost. Because it's quote-unquote free, people continue to overuse the service. You know, high demand drives up the cost, and it continues to cascade upon itself to the point where, you know, it becomes 30, 40, 50% of the federal budget. And it's certainly going to eventually run out of control to the point where there is no money left to pay for it. And that's where the next step happens, which is the government decides exactly how much money they're going to spend. This is their budget. They tell doctors what their rates are going to be. They tell hospitals what they're going to pay. They decide how many of individual procedures are going to be taking place each year and be paid for. And that's what we have in Canada, where everything is fixed and they use 10% of their GDP is in healthcare, and that's the maximum amount. And doctors go ahead and do all the procedures they can and end up closing up shop in late October, early November, because they've already been paid all the money the government's going to pay them for that year. And it becomes a rationing system. And it becomes either direct rationing, because the government says, here's how much we're going to pay, and we're not going to do any more procedures than X number, or it becomes indirect, because the government pays so little for the services that there's nobody left who's willing to provide them. And we're already seeing a little bit of that in the way Medicare pays primary care physicians today.
James Lansbury is our guest. We're talking about health care and the crisis that attends it when we come back. The president was recently speaking to a group of doctors, and he raised early in his conversation with them the high cost of medical malpractice. He said, yes, I know that's a cost that you have to bear, and I know that it's outrageous, and I know that's part of the reason that your costs go up. I wonder how much of a factor is medical malpractice insurance and its cost for physicians and other people in the healthcare industry. How much of that is a factor here in the healthcare crisis? We'll answer that question on the other side of the break. Your questions and comments are certainly welcome as well on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 24th, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org. And click on-demand audio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151. Or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues Etc. back, Nathan Peggers, Eric Rosiner, Jody Wright, Benjamin Tice, James Little, Richard Myers, John West, David Kelsall, Mark Zabel, and Dean Darling. Thanks for your support.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with James Lansbury, president of the Alliance Health Care Sharing Ministries and Vice President of Samaritan Ministries International, based in Peoria, Illinois. It's Wednesday afternoon, June the 24th. Healthcare is the subject. James, I'm wondering, how much of this do you think is also apathy on the part of the consumer? Because I'm thinking about myself. For the most part, my eyes in the past would glaze over when people talked about the healthcare crisis. I didn't understand it, and I wasn't particularly interested. My employer was paying most of it. I've had to pay some, but it wasn't killing me until I had to start footing the bill myself. Now I'm intensely interested in this, and then I think about my dad, who post-retirement is also paying his own healthcare. And so, again, I'm intensely interested. What about apathy on the part of the consumer?
Well, I think apathy on the part of the consumer is part of what's driven up the cost in the past, again, this artificially increased demand that I was talking about bottoming up because there isn't any incentive for the consumer to keep costs down and then becoming completely insulated from it. So when a few businesses start raising their premiums and their employee copays and the employee share of it, you listen and you think, well, it's not the big a deal because it's not affecting me. And then, of course, that starts to spread because it does eventually start affecting you because the market works as a whole. And I think that needs to be admitted that, okay, we just haven't been concerned consumers in the area of healthcare. People think, well, you know, it's healthcare, so what do? No one would go into their doctor and say, hey, can I get a discount on that? Because they don't think about it. You know, no one thinks, well, maybe my doctor would give me a discount because Blue Cross Blue Shield is paying $60 to this doctor and he's charging me $90. Maybe I could get him to take $80 because he doesn't have to file any paperwork with Blue Cross Blue Shield. But those are just not thoughts that occur to us because you go in, you get the bill, and the doctor may not even see the bill. And in the case of people who have insurance, especially first dollar coverage insurance, they don't even see the real cost of the event. And I think there's been apathy everywhere because it's just been assumed that it's a closed system and it's going to work itself out. And now we see it getting up to 16, 17, 18% of GDP. And now we see, oh, wait, maybe we should have been concerned about this. And I think that's what we're starting to see now. And I think the biggest danger we have is now that we're actually concerned about it, instead of trying to figure out a way to put the market to bear on the healthcare industry, we're going to allow the government to step in and try to fix everything all at once without considering why we got to where we got and whether or not we can fix the real problem.
Can you tell me what happened when my first child was born? This was 17 years ago. I remember getting insurance covered some of it. Then I got a big fat bill from the hospital. I was a young pastor, didn't have any money, and one of my parishioners said, don't worry, they won't come and repossess the kid. Pay them what you can when you can. We did, and it took about 2 years to pay her off. When the second child was born 5 years later, I paid $25, and we went home, and I never saw another bill.
Yeah, the difference is that the models of insurance have changed quite a bit, even in those 5 years, and they've continued to change. And it's because of that incentive to prepay for your health care through your employer, because at that point it's completely tax-free. Whereas if I go out and buy the same health insurance policy from an insurance agent down the block, I'm going to pay 15% payroll taxes between myself and my employer on those dollars, and I'll only be able to deduct the part of the insurance that goes over and above 7.5% of my adjusted gross income, and then only if I itemize my deductions on my taxes, which fewer than half of Americans do. So, you know, there's this perverse incentive to only buy it through your employer and then to buy as much as possible because everything your employer's policy doesn't cover, you're going to be on that same playing field where only what goes above 7.5% of your adjusted gross income is tax-free, and then only with respect to federal taxes, not with respect to payroll taxes. And so that taxpayer subsidy, that tax exclusion for employer-provided insurance, just continues to put more and more dollars through that system because it's cheaper for them to buy you a more expensive health insurance policy than it is to pay you the same amount because there's no payroll taxes on that.
One more question, then some solutions. How much of a factor is medical malpractice on the part of on the physician and healthcare provider end of this thing?
It depends on the state. And part of that becomes because states have different rules concerning that. And I think that we need to look at medical malpractice as something completely separate, as a whole separate market that we need to look at and say, what are the problems here? And I think the way that we can see medical malpractice reform is to actually not mandate the doctors carry it, make sure that if they're not carrying malpractice insurance, they have to disclose that to their patients. But if a doctor doesn't want to carry it, He's not going to have deep pockets because there's not a big million-dollar insurance policy sitting behind him, and there won't be any perverse incentive to sue him to use those big pockets, and then the trial lawyers start to back away from the situation. And then we'll find that maybe medical malpractice starts to correct itself to just be those legitimate cases of a doctor really honestly not performing the services that he was supposed to be performing. And I think that until we get to that point, we're not really able to see really how medical malpractice is affecting it, because we've got so many different criteria surrounding us and in bearing on that cost, that until we have doctors that are actually saying, Nick, I'm just not going to carry malpractice insurance anymore, and if you think you're going to sue me, here's the maximum amount you're going to get, and then the insurance rates start dropping because the trial lawyers can't get the big judgments out of them, and so therefore, you know, the market starts to work and drive those costs back down and make it a little different scenario, and the courts start to work it out as well. But I don't think that deciding a one-size-fits-all malpractice insurance reform, that the federal government just comes in and says we're going to put a cap on this, really helps the whole situation. All it's going to, but it will make the doctors happy.
Okay, what is a workable and feasible, even politically feasible, solution, or at least a beginning of a solution to the crisis such as it exists today?
Well, the beginning of the solution is to level the tax playing field. And politically, when you say politically feasible, that means you can't just take away the tax exclusion for employer-provided insurance, because nobody wants to raise taxes on 75% of Americans. And so it's not politically feasible to level the playing field by taking the tax exclusion away for employer-provided insurance. But if you provided a similar ability to give people a tax credit to offset their employer-paid payroll taxes and such to purchase any health care product anywhere, then you would level that playing field and then allow the market start to work away from the employer model. Because I think that people don't want to have employer-provided insurance. They want to be in control of their insurance. Because you hear stories on the news all the time about people feeling like they're stuck in their job, that they can't leave, even though they hate their job, because they don't want to give up their health insurance. Well, if they owned their health insurance, or whatever their health model was, whether it be healthcare sharing ministry or an HSA, but those dollars belong to them instead of belonging to the employer, then that portability issue would be solved, and then you'd find the market starting to bear down on the prices because the patient would be back in control of the dollars. And that's the issue. You know, the president's talked about keeping the insurance companies honest, and I think that's a laudable goal. But the only way to keep the insurance companies honest for their service to patients is to make the insurance companies work for the patients instead of for the employers. Because the insurance companies are providing the exact service that the employers want them to do. They're doing all the benefits packages for employers, but they're not working for the employee or the patient. And if we switch the system and put the market forces in place to get the system to switch naturally, then I think that's a completely feasible one. Jim DeMint has a bill that just came out this week, the Healthcare Freedom Act, that will actually start to work that direction and help the market to bear on the cost to come down without increasing any government control and without a single taxpayer dollar.
Then with only about a minute here, what are organizations like Alliance Healthcare, Sharing Ministries, and Samaritan Ministries International, what are they doing to deal with the issues we've been discussing here around healthcare?
Well, we're trying to make sure that we don't inadvertently get left out of any bill that gets passed. If a reform bill gets passed mandating insurance like they passed in Massachusetts, we want to make sure our members are protected and seen as already obeying the intent of that mandate so that their religious freedom is protected and they can continue to take part in healthcare sharing ministry. So we're trying to work with those who are drafting the various bills in Congress right now to make sure our members are exempted. But I think that we want to continue to provide a service for the church, broader church, of a patient-centered, faith-based, non-insurance option for Christians who want to make their dollars be pro-life and consistently patient-centered so that they're in charge and they're able to make the best health care decisions for their family, but have people to come alongside them to help bear those burdens when they get big.
So then in a nutshell, with 30 seconds, what is health care sharing that you've talked so often about here?
Health care sharing is a non-insurance, faith-based alternative, not-for-profit, that allows families to share in each other's health care burdens at a fraction of the cost of insurance in a way that meets the financial and the spiritual and the emotional needs. And the Samaritan Ministries provides this alternative for $285 or less for a family of three or more, and you can find out information at SamaritanMinistries.org, SamaritanMinistries.org.
James Lansbury is president of Alliance Healthcare Sharing Ministries and vice president of Samaritan Ministries International, based in Peoria, Illinois. We'll post a link to both these organizations under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. James, thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been great to be here.
When we come back from this break, Pastor John Moe is going to join us. It's called the Great Commission. This is a now universal term of art in the Christian church, the Great Commission. I don't know where it came from. But what does it mean? What does Jesus mean when he says, go make disciples by baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit and teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you? Lo, I am with you always to the end of the age. That's the Great Commission. What does it mean? And what happens when that passage of Scripture, as good and as valuable as it is, becomes the new center of how the Christian church thinks about itself? When it becomes the seed of doctrine for all other doctrines and runs the show. Not a good idea. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
What does Issues, Etc. mean to you? Later this month, we'll celebrate the one-year anniversary of the return of Issues, Etc., and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from, 618-223-8384. What does Issues, Etc. mean to you? 618-223-8384.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Philadelphia Women's Center is an abortion mill. They recently offered free abortions for a day to show appreciation for George Tiller. He's the notorious late-term abortionist who was gunned down in Wichita, Kansas. The Philadelphia abortion business did it to honor Tiller's memory and legacy. And what a legacy it was. He claims to have performed over 60,000 abortions. Most of those were late-term abortions done on healthy, viable babies. There's no such thing as a free abortion. It costs the life of a baby, it puts women at risk for physical complications, and it burdens them with a lifetime of being the parent of a dead baby. They shouldn't offer to kill a woman's baby to solve her problems. Women deserve much better than abortion.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Jeremy Smallhorn, Christian Joe, Robert and Joyce Jarvis, Judy Herring, Ruth Westbrook, Carlisle Herring, Karina Sweeney, Renee Wiley, and Bradley Ketchum. Thanks for your support.